Right, good evening. So we are looking now at a discourse which has to do with the Parshat HaShavua, with the Sedra of the Week, which is a double Sedra, Acharei Mot and Kedoshim. Acharei Mot, which literally means after the death, is that God spoke to Moshe after the death of the two sons of Aaron. The point being that the two sons of Aaron had rushed into the Holy of Holies with an intense yearning to come close to the divine, and unfortunately they passed away. They died.
Do you think Yom HaAtzmaut, which starts today, was chosen with that in mind?
I didn't think so. Yom HaAtzmaut is on the 5th of Iyar tonight. And I don't think that's always this particular Sedra. But it is an expression of great spiritual yearning, tremendous spiritual yearning. And the actual account of that was a couple of weeks ago in the Sedra, in Parshat Shemini, where it describes the actual event. And here, it's, as it were, it gives another way that one can enter the Holy of Holies. A way which will not result in disaster, and in fact, the opposite. Mm. And in fact, the positive way to enter the Holy of Holies is that once a year, it's Yom Kippur. And on Yom Kippur, on the Day of Atonement, everyone fasts, and it's a special spiritual day. And on that day, the high priest alone goes into the Holy of Holies. And so there is a way for, having built this sanctuary, this beautiful sanctuary with its different sections, and that the innermost point is the Holy of Holies, so there is a way to go into the Holy of Holies in a positive and grounded way, and that is the high priest on Yom Kippur, on the Day of Atonement, going into the Holy of Holies. And it's a very, very intense experience for him and for the whole Jewish people. And in fact, it brings atonement to everyone. It brings atonement because by entering the highest level of holiness, that brings a kind of a pouring of divine radiance, which heals all the little flaws that have come about through the different little errors that people make during the course of daily life. And all those errors get smoothed away. They're like wrinkles, like spiritual wrinkles. They get smoothed away by this flow of divine radiance. And there it is. Everything is healed. And there it's, and so there it is, healed by the high priest going into the Holy of Holies. Now let's just have a look at the first few lines of the actual Sedra. Vayadaber Hashem el Moshe, and God spoke to Moshe. So here I'm reading from over here, which is the text of the actual Torah reading, which will be read this Shabbat. God spoke to Moshe, Acharei Mot Shnei Bnei Aaron, after the death of the two sons of Aaron, Bekorav Osom Lifnei Hashem, when they came close before God, Vayomusu, and they died. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, and God said to Moshe, Dabe al Aaron Ochicho, speak to Aaron your brother, Va'al Yavoi Bechol Eisel HaKodesh, and he shouldn't come at any time into the Holy of Holies, Mibeis LaPeroiches, to the other side of the curtain. There was a curtain dividing the holy level from the Holy of Holies. And the holy part, that is somewhere where everyone, the Kohanim, could go every day. It wasn't a place that anyone could go, but it was a place where there was the golden menorah, and so it was accessible. And they would have to go in to light the golden menorah, the golden lamp, every day, every evening. And there was a little golden altar where they would offer incense every day. So the outer part, the holy part, was accessible. But the Holy of Holies, that's something only once a year. So do not go at any time into the holy place beyond the curtain. El Pnei HaKaporet Asher Aloran, to the cover. Now, the cover, there was the ark. You see, the cover which is on the ark. And the cover had a very interesting feature engraved or carved out of the cover. What was that?
Two angels.
That's right. The two angels, or cherubim, two cherubs. Two figurines. It's very interesting that in Jewish teaching, which so much rejects any kind of image, with again and again verses which say you didn't see any image, there is no image, you mustn't bow down to any image, you mustn't have any image, there in the Holy of Holies were two golden figurines carved on the top of the golden ark, and the sages tell us they represented a male and a female. And those two were, they were facing each other, and the Midrash even speaks about them embracing each other, and they represent two different aspects of the divine. Mm. The higher level of the divine, the male, so to speak, and the malchut, kingship, the divine presence. And when they are unified together, then the whole of existence is in a state of harmony. And when they are separate, when they are dislocated, then the whole of existence is in a state of disharmony. And that's exile. So there's a sense of exile which pervades existence, which is the existence of suffering and of evil and of many negative things, of disease, all kinds of unhappy aspects of life. That really emerges from the fact that there is a kind of dislocation within the divine, and the task of our lives is to reunite the Holy One and the Shekhinah and the Divine Presence, this male and female dimension, so to speak, male and female. Of course, it's infinitely exalted and spiritual and so on, but it's actually the source of male and female in our human lives as well. So the fact that we are divided into male and female, with all the joy and the problems that causes, that precisely is part of the same dialectic emerging from godliness, and so everything reflects that as well. So that is there in the Holy of Holies, and that's on the cover on the ark. And coming close to this ark in an inappropriate way is dangerous. Further on in the Bible, this ark was actually stolen. There was a battle with the Philistines, and they took the ark into battle, and the Philistines captured the ark. And they put it in their idolatrous temple, the idol of that place being Dagon, which means corn, so he was presumably a fertility idol of some kind, making the corn grow. And the next morning, Dagon had fallen on the floor and was broken in bits. And eventually they twigged that is because of the golden ark. So they decided they're going to put this golden ark on a cart and let some oxen take it wherever they want. And sure enough, the oxen took it back to Israel. So from wherever it was, I think it was in Ashkelon. So the
oxen... Didn't they have plague at the time?
There may well have been there as well, yes. You could be right. And then it took it back to Ashkelon. Then King David is trying to get the ark from where it stopped to bring it to Jerusalem. And someone stretched out their arm to hold it. He thought that the ark was going to fall off the cart, and he died, a man called Uzzah. And he stretched out his hand to support it, and he died. And King David was very upset, and he left the ark there for a while, but it was left in the field of a certain person who prospered tremendously because the ark was there, and so they felt that, the ark is benevolent, and they came back and eventually brought it back to Jerusalem, with King David dancing very wildly. If you want to bring the sacred, awe-inspiring ark to Jerusalem, you got to dance very wildly. And King David's wife, Michal, was not impressed. She was the daughter of a king, And King David, of course, had started life as a shepherd. So she looks out of her window and she sees him dancing wildly, and she says, "Oh, is this the way to behave, King of Israel?" And she was very critical of him. And it's interesting the way the Bible in the book of Samuel, you know, records these little tiffs. And and he responded, "Yes, this is the way to serve God, by dancing very wildly." So by being very joyful. Maimonides quotes this when he's talking about the mitzvah, the positive command of being joyful in Judaism. So joy is part of the whole scene, which of course this can go to extremes, and sometimes extremes are right. But there is the whole tension around the ark. The ark is something very special, and coming into that Holy of Holies close to the ark. And v'lo yamus, God says, you've got to be very careful about coming into the Holy of Holies, where the ark is, where the golden ark with the golden cherubs, ki be'ono neroe lakapoiris, because I appear in a cloud over the cover of the ark. And Rashi says that there are two meanings to this. One is the literal meaning that God's presence is there at the ark, and the second meaning is that, and like in a cloud, a kind of a mystic cloud. And secondly, the way to come into the Holy of Holies is with a cloud of incense, and that's how Aaron the high priest should come into the Holy of Holies once a year on Yom Kippur, with a cloud of incense, in other words, with a pannier of incense. And then it says, "Bezois yova Aaron el HaKodesh," this is what Aaron should have in order to come into the sacred place. And it describes a offering that he has to bring. In fact, there are a number of offerings, and it goes on in the next verse, "Kosoines bad kodesh yilbosh," he should wear a cloak of sacred linen, "Umichnasei bad," and trousers of linen, "Yiyu al basaroi," should be on his flesh, "Uva avnet bad yachgo," and he should have a linen belt which he should wear around his loins, "Uva mitznefes bad yitznoif," and he should wear a turban of linen on his head. Bigdei kodesh hein, they are sacred garments, "Varochatz b'mayim es besoroi," and he should wash his flesh with water, "Ulevesham," and he should wear them. Now the washing with water is a reference to the mikveh. The high priest would go to the mikveh several times during Yom Kippur, and one of he would go to the mikveh before changing his clothes, because these white linen clothes were only worn by the high priest on the Day of Atonement in order to go into the Holy of Holies. Because the rest of the year, the high priest wore very elaborate clothes made with gold threads, and they were very wonderful, splendid clothes. But in order to go into the Holy of Holies, he would wear these very simple white linen clothes. Now, and then the chapter proceeds with a description of exactly what happens on the day of Yom Kippur, the high priest carrying out many different aspects of the Yom Kippur service. On Yom Kippur now, in the Musaf, sort of the middle of the day, just the early afternoon, let's say, we recite from the Mishnah a description of what the high priest did on Yom Kippur. And this is the Torah reading on the morning of Yom Kippur, this passage. So this passage that we're going to be reading in the Torah this Shabbat, on Yom Kippur in the autumn, will also be the Torah reading then. And that's the first part of the Sedra, of this week's Sedra. The latter part of this week's Sedra concerns forbidden relationships incest, adultery, things like that. So all these forbidden relationships, there's a long list of them. On Yom Kippur afternoon, that is the Torah reading there. We also read the book of Jonah on Yom Kippur afternoon, because Jonah was a prophet who tried to run away from God, and one of the messengers is, you can't run away from God. Well, that's one way of understanding why we read it. Another reason why we read it is because it speaks about repentance. The whole city of Nineveh repenting. So if the whole city of Nineveh could repent, so can we repent. And so we read it on the afternoon of Yom Kippur. But it's the two halves of this sedra, this section of the Torah, are read on Yom Kippur. This part, going on a few more pages, describing what happens on Yom Kippur day, and then the account of the forbidden relationships, which is read in the afternoon at Mincha, the afternoon service of Yom Kippur. Now, the discourse that we're going to be looking at, and this is where it moves into Hebrew, despite the enticing English translation at the beginning. So the discourse is one that was said exactly 30 years ago in 1976, and it's a discourse which focuses on this clothing, the wearing of these linen garments. And the basic upshot of the discourse is that it's going to describe a kind of a spiritual dimension of each of these garments, these four garments worn by the high priest, which is the a cloak and trousers and a belt and a turban, and it's going to describe a kind of a spiritual way in which those garments have an effect. And the upshot of it is that each one of us is the high priest in our own inner temple and inner holy of holies, and we are the ones who are wearing these white linen garments. And we don't only do it on Yom Kippur, we can do it any day of the year. And so there is this possibility of each one of us to attain a kind of an inner spiritual dimension just by having this image of another aspect of ourselves. You were going to say?
No, is that a thing to do with it being in Tiferet this week?
Ah, that's an interesting point.
And going into the balance.
Right.
Where you have a kind of opening into that higher...
All right, well, that's a very beautiful way of looking at it, and maybe it's connected. You see, in the week, in the counting of the days of the Omer, this week is the week of Tiferet. That means it's the central pillar. The first week of the Omer is kindness, chesed.
Mm-hmm.
The second week is severity. And we're now in the third week, which is Tiferet, which is the middle line, which is a kind of a balancing line. And so this balancing line reaches to the very, very highest levels. So I'm sure that someone could find some kind of drasha somewhere, some explanation connecting that all together. Now,
I'm not happy about Uzzah.
About Uzzah? You're worrying about Uzzah?
Yeah, why did he know that he shouldn't touch the ark?
Well, there is a whole chapter in Tanya which talks about that, that it's really King David's error. Because he should have instructed everyone, first of all, the ark shouldn't have been on a cart. It should have been carried on people's shoulders. And so that's was an error to let it be carried on a cart. And so things went on from there. It's King David who felt it. It was Uzzah who died, but it was King David who felt that it was his fault. And the Talmud speaks about why it was his fault and in what way, what subtle spiritual error he had made in some other connection which led to him forgetting how to proceed with the ark. I think your unhappiness about Uzzah is like being unhappy about the two sons of Aaron. that there they are in this very spiritual situation, and suddenly bang, because of it's so intensely spiritual that their souls leave their body. And there is it's a kind of a spiritual hazard that when you're dealing with very intense spiritual realities, they sometimes do work in a in an ungewünschener way, as they would say in
in the Tibetan Book of the Dead in Chogron Rinpoche as the highest way of willing the highest masters willing their deaths and going up in a colourful flaming
Well, that's a very interesting thing, because that's exactly the line that you can draw between Jewish mysticism and other forms of mysticism, where Judaism is so intensely life-affirming. Mm. And although it is possible, and you do see people leaving the world in different ecstatic ways, a very famous person is when Rabbi Akiva led four people, him and three other people, into Pardes, into the deepest secrets of Torah, and one of them died of ecstasy. And the Talmud says, precious in the eyes of God is the death of his pious ones. You know, as so much to say that it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to die of ecstasy. And yet, it's not the path. The path is maybe to hold back the ecstasy a little bit and remain, or a lot, and remain in this world. And everything has to be in such a way that together with being inspired, your feet can be on the ground and you can get up in the morning and go to work. So it's told even about Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the founder of Chabad, that he once felt he was in such an intense state of ecstasy that it was dangerous. And he sat down and he ate a bagel with butter. That's right. Down here, that's right. So that sense of coming down. So it is a problem, David, but it's part of the hazards, and the path with heart, the path of the Lev Tov, as Pirkei Avot says, which is the best way that which is the best path that a person should cleave to, and so the one that gets the 5-star is the path of the good heart. So the path of the good heart is one where one's feet are on the ground and one is part of the world and one is able to relate to other people. All these worldly attainments together with being able to maintain a spiritual presence at the same time. But there is a sense in which the temptation to leave the world is a sort of a universal aspect of the human condition, that to dissolve into the infinite, and it's so tempting in so many different ways, and the opposite end of the spectrum, to be able to somehow make everything move round so that the very highest holiness is discovered in the world. So that is the general attempt. So, for example, only Moses is spoken of as someone who in any way was celibate, and he wasn't always celibate, but when he became a person who all the time was communicating with the divine and God was communicating with him in a way which transcended ordinary earthly conditions. Would you like a more comfortable chair?
No, I like this chair.
Yeah, okay. So he then did not have physical relations with his wife, which in fact was criticized by Miriam and Aaron. Expressing a more conventional Jewish perspective. And so Moshe's path is not one which is imitated usually by other you know, famous sages or anything like that. So it is a matter of being able to enter the holy realm and to bring it with you into the daily realm. Mm. So that's the attempt of to move. And also the way in which the deepest mystical qualities can be and ideally are expressed in actual physical activities, that the physical activity, the mitzvah, becomes the concretization of the contact with the infinite. So let's say we're coming towards Shabbat, so on Friday afternoon before sunset, lighting a Shabbat candle or two Shabbat candles, this is a very, very spiritual experience. And one in which the woman or the girl lighting the Shabbat candles is actually bringing holiness into this world with this power of the feminine, of malchut, of kingship, that she has, reaching to the highest level and bringing that glow into this world. Now, in preparation for the discourse, as was the custom very often when the Rebbe would say this discourse, there is the mimer melody, the melody of the mimer. Oh, ya, 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 yo, ya, yo. Ayira, ayira, yo, ya, boom. Oh, ya, bam, ba, ya, ba, yo, bam, boom. Ha yira dam ba yom ra dam ba yom aho ya yira dam ba yom ba yo ya yira dam ba yom ba yom ha yira dam ba ha yira dam ba yo ya yam ba yam bam bam ho yam bam ba yam bam bam ho yam bam bo yam bam bo. Kosoi nesbad kodesh yulbash, he should wear a garment, a robe of linen, of sacred linen. Umich nesbad yual basodoi, and trousers of linen should be on his flesh. Uvaavnet bad yachgo, and with a belt of linen he should wear like a belt. Uvmitznefes bad yitznof, and he should wear a turban of linen on his head. Bigdei kodesh heim, they are sacred garments. Umadaikim bedrushei rabbeinu, and in the teachings of the previous rebbeim, nisiyenu, our leaders, ubegemara, and in the gemara, ubetoras kahanim, and in the midrash, the toras kahanim, the sifra, lama nema bad eitzel kolechot me'abegodim. Why does it use the word linen next to each one of the garments? Bad. It says it four times, the word linen. Vahavale loime, it could have just said, given that the Torah is very, very economical about every single word and each word is significant, it could have just said, Sheyil kulam bigde bad, all of them should be clothes of linen. It doesn't have to say the word again and again. And from this we learn from the Talmud at the bottom of the footnotes, which tells us where it is in the Talmud. And where all these different explanations come from. So in the Talmud, in Yuma, which is the volume of Talmud, Yuma is Aramaic for the day, the great day, the special day. And so it's a volume of Talmud all about Yom Kippur. One volume, all about Yom Kippur. So it tells us there in the Talmud, Shetzolich liyos mufchosh bebad veloy bad stam. It has to be the very choice, very most beautiful and special linen, not ordinary linen. Now, it's interesting. The Talmud takes it in a very practical way. You know, so the kind of linen has to be A1 linen. You know, so when they're getting the linen to make the clothes of the Kohanim, has to be absolutely top-notch linen. V'hine bigdei kohanim b'diyuk dafka. Now, the clothes of the Kohanim are very precise. We're not allowed to have less garments. If it says the high priest should wear four garments, we can't say, well, we've lost the belt, so you'll just have to wear three. No, it has to be all four garments. and we're not allowed to add another one. The mizem movement from which we can understand shekolechem me'abig de kohuna, that each one of the clothes of the kahanim yesh lo inyan, it's got some special quality. V'gam yesh lo inyan shehu betziruf kulam yachad dafka, and also there's some special quality when you connect all the garments together. Shezel ma've'itza v'gemara shetzalech yos mufcha shebabad, that's why the Talmud says they all have to be the very best of the linen. You learn out that they have to be special linen because it's four different things about each one of which it says linen. Now this idea of a thing which is significant by itself but gains in significance by being together with something else is the deep nature of language. Because in language you have letters. You have letters, and each letter is a significant thing in itself. But when you put three or four letters together, suddenly you have a word. And it's something infinitely higher than those individual letters. So you could say the letter Yud in Hebrew is a very profound letter. That's a wonderful letter. The letter He is a wonderful letter. The letter Vav is a wonderful letter. And another He. But then you put all four letters together, you have the divine name. And you suddenly have something which is of incredible holiness. And so it's this sense of combination. The same way with people. That there's a sense in which people, each person, is a very significant person. And then you have a husband, and you have a wife, and you have a son, and you have a daughter. That also represents the divine name. So there is another way in which something very spiritual is being manifest in the world. So there's this idea of a thing having significance as one individual, and the fact of taking several things together, and at this moment it's being read into the garments of the high priest. And what this means, as is taught in the teachings of the previous Lubavitch Rebbeim, Kvoit Kedushas Adma Hazaken, the first Lubavitch Rebbe, Rabbi Shna Zalman, Kvoit Kedushas Adma Emtsoi, the second Lubavitch Rebbe, Rabbi Dov Ber, Kvoit Kedushas Adma Etzemach Tzedek, and the third Lubavitch Rebbe called Menachem Mendel, who lived in the middle of the 19th century, and our Rebbe was named after them. Now, I only just noticed. You see, from the point of view of the Rebbe, his significance as a Rebbe to us was partly because he was a teacher, but also partly because he was the seventh of a series of seven teachers. The first of whom was Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who lived around 1800, and then his son, and his son-in-law actually, his son, and then his grandson, who was the son-in-law of the second one. They're all descendants of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, but sometimes it's like a son-in-law. So the fact of the Rebbe being the seventh Rebbe, and there are these six Rebbeim, these six teachers before, gives him a special spiritual quality, and gives us, as what he called the seventh generation, we are the seventh generation, we have a special spiritual quality, rather like the word, that the word is a combination of letters. So you could have a letter which is a very profound thing, but because it's together with other letters, it gains in meaning. Now, in every discourse that the Rebbe taught, he would generally mention each of the other Rebbeim. Not always, but there was always this idea in the background that he would mention the other six preceding Rebbeim in some way, and he would tell her something around. So there is a sense in which there is some totality of the process of bringing the spiritual into the world. You see, that's what these particular teachers represent. There have been many thousands of very, very great Jewish teachers. And if you want to take a line of the greatest ones, you know, maybe it's not thousands, but you can put it together a certain number of great figures. But the special quality of these Chabad Lubavitch Rebbeim, these Chabad Lubavitch teachers, is to bring the highest level of spirituality into the world and make it accessible to us almost without borders, without limitations, in a very, very remarkable way. And when you do things without borders and without limitation, except they do take into account very carefully what might be dangerous and how to do it in a healthy and in a balanced way. But when you are breaking borders in certain ways, this does incite opposition and anger, and because of that there was opposition to the Hasidic movement in the 18th century and to some extent in the 19th century and even to some extent today, because of a fear of this kind of opening of the gates. And yet these teachers felt that it was the right thing to open the gates, and they're opening the gates to us. We are the ones whom they are opening the gates for, and they say this is the right thing to be done, because in order for the Jewish people and the world to continue in a healthy way, these gates need to be opened up of these teachings, and we need to be able to take these teachings into our lives. So what these previous Chabad teachers explain, the Isibur of Moshe Kodavero, right, Reish Mem Kuf stands for Rav Moshe Kodavero. It says in the book by Rabbi Moshe Kodavero, he was a great Kabbalist. He lived in Svat in the 16th century. And he says, the Arba Bigdei Lavan, that the four white garments of the high priest, Heim Dalet Ois Yashem Yudke Vavke, they are the four letters of the name of God. So there you have these four garments, worn by the high priest and ultimately by ourselves as well in some figurative sense. They represent the name of God, and so there is the high priest enclosed in the name of God. Now it's interesting that in Tanya talks about a person and the way in which the person represents the divine name. The head and the thinking part of the person is the yud. And then there comes to the feeling of the person, which is the hey, the contemplation, the feeling. And then comes the speech and the actions, which is the vav and the hey. This is in Igeres HaTshuva, Letter on Repentance, the end of chapter 4. So it has there a description of the person in terms of a divine name. And it would be a perfectly reasonable approach to contemplative prayer for a person to look at that letter on repentance in Tanya, part 3 of Tanya, chapter 4, it's towards the end of chapter 4, and to envisage, and to imagine this divine name, which is the person, that the person is this divine name, and then to pray to God. Because that's, you know, then you sort of, you recognize this sacred mode, this sacred dimension within yourself, and then a person is able to pray to God and communicate with God on a deeper level. So this discourse here could be seen as a kind of an adjunct to that. Mm. This idea of wearing these four garments, and these four garments represent the divine name. We're on the third line in the second paragraph, Va'inyan Hu, and what this means is as follows. The mitznefes koi al keser. The turban concerns keser, crown. Now, if you remember the whole structure of the sefirot, keser is right at the top, and that is the crown, which is beyond all the other levels of sefirot. Vezeu masha mitznefes hois al haroish, and that's why the turban was on the head. V'hi lechaper, and it is to atone for the kon alinyan hagaiva, for pride. You see, pride is in fact a leading problem in people's lives. Because pride causes an enormous amount of suffering. Because the person feels, why is this happening to me? I don't deserve it. Whereas if a person is able, as Rav Pinchas of Koritz, who was like a friend of the Baal Shem Tov, if a person is able to be like a little bit of dust, so then they can say, well, what can happen to me? I'm just a little bit of dust. So whatever happens to a little bit of dust doesn't make any difference. Yes, Bob.
Is this where we pray in Amida, Amimas, or be as dust?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because then we are completely not concerned. We say, let my soul be as dust, because then whatever anyone might say to us, it doesn't matter. We're able to take it with a smile and good humouredly. Whereas if we're all puffed up, yes, then you know, we get very offended. Whereas if we're just as dust, we're fine. That, whatever it is, we're fine. I mean, this is a wonderful concept of equanimity. And the best way of testing it is if your car gets clamped by a parking warden. See? See if you feel like dust. Well, there is the idea of the turban on one's head, which is to atone for pride. The avon hagaiva, because the transgression of pride, noigeya ofoigem lemaila maila, it has a serious effect on a very high level, beroish of the head, bivchinas hakeser, reaching even to the level of keser. So therefore, we have the level of the person. Let's just try and express this in some way graphically. So we're going to try to depict both the, see, there's wisdom and understanding. So wisdom goes on the right, and that's chokhmah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have understanding, which is bina. Mm-hmm. And that is like a high supreme level, which is then going to flow down lower and lower level. But what this is speaking about is keter, which is the crown. Sorry, Anthony.
Watch it.
Yeah. You see, so there is keter, there is the crown. Is everyone able to see that? And the point is that pride, somehow, any negative thing that we do reaches up or down into this spiritual system. It's as if there's a spiritual system inside us, and there's a spiritual system beyond us. And the spiritual system beyond us is actually affected by our behavior. And when we do good things, positive things, then it has a positive effect. And when we do negative things, it has a negative effect. Like the saying in Pirkei Avot, in Ethics of the Fathers, Da ma lamaila mimoch, know that which is above you. So that means, you know, think about God who is above you. But the Hasidim gave another twist to that. Da ma lemala, know that which is above, mimoch, comes from you. So if you act in the right way, it'll have a good effect on those realms above, and if you act in the opposite way, it'll have a negative effect. So we're always walking with a kind of an aura or a shadow of the effect that of what we are doing or saying or thinking in our lives. And so there's a sense in which Jewish spirituality is being more aware about the different kinds of echoes that we are triggering off through the different steps in our life. So there we have the idea that pride has this effect higher and higher. Now, he now brings a contradiction. The aim is estira. Now, this does not contradict to another statement. The Mashikos of Kvod Kedushin Sadma Zokin, Rabbi Shneur Zalman says, Babir Inyan Hamitz Nefes, when he's explaining the turban, She'orka Yudvovama, he says, now the turban is 16 cubits long, because it is of a Rambam, as the Rambam tells us. The Rambam goes through all these different garments. So it's 16 cubits long, ubeis paimim yudvav, and twice 16, hu lamed beis, is 32, and 32 is keneged lamed beis nesivas chochma, 32 paths of wisdom.
Mm.
32 paths of wisdom is an ancient concept from the Book of Creation, which speaks about 22 letters, and 10 sefirot, 10 divine emanations, and the 22 and 10 together make 32, and those are the 32 paths of wisdom. So that is an ancient concept, and the turban wound round the head relates to the 32 paths of wisdom. Now, doesn't that contradict what we're saying here? Because we are saying not that the turban is wisdom, but that it's Keter, it's the crown, which is higher up. And he says, no, this is no contradiction. Shahari she'inina mitznefes. So according to this, the turban, hu b'moichin v'loy b'keter, is in the mind. You see, that's like the brain, the spiritual dimension of the brain, wisdom and understanding, rather than in the crown. And he says, no. Ki inyan ha-mitznefes, what is the turban? Humasha ha-keser nimshach b'chochma, is the fact that the crown, that which is beyond, ayin, nothingness, there is a phrase, v'ha-chochma me'ayin yimotze, wisdom comes from nothing. And this is the nothingness beyond of Keser. And that level flows into the mind. And what is the effect? It creates a sense of absolute selflessness and self-effacement. The ultimate of wisdom is total self-effacement. That the person, these very teachings themselves, you see, this teaching that we're reading was said on a Shabbat when people could not take notes, and they couldn't make a tape recording, but there was a whole team of people who were able to just open up like a jug, and it was being poured in, and at the end of the day they were able to express it again and write it all down. So this was written down by people memorizing it, and so the ability liklot, to absorb, comes from a complete eradication of self at that particular moment. And a great person is always in that state of eradication of self, always drawing from a higher level. So here we're talking about the flow of Keser. This turban represents a flow which is coming down to wisdom, which means that the wisdom is totally receptive to that and is totally self-effaced. And that, of course, is the tikkun, the healing of pride. Because pride is that the person is so puffed up that he can't open to Keter. He can't open to that which is beyond. So it's being so totally nothing that that which is beyond is able to flow into the person. V'zehu masha mitznefes bo lechape ala gaiva, and that is why the turban comes to atone for pride. Now look at the word pride, Gimel Aleph Vav He, which has the gematria Yud Kei 15. Gimel is 3, Aleph is 1, Vav is 6, so that's 3 and 1 is 4, 6 is 10, and then a He makes 15. So pride has the numerical value 15, and 15 Yud and He is the beginning of the divine name, Yud and He and Vav and He, and so that Yud, wisdom, is the Yud. Like the male drop, which enters of semen, which enters understanding, the hay, the female. And that gives birth, as it were, to the lower levels, to the vav, and then the hay. And so this is the yud and the hay. And so pride is a yud and hay. And wisdom and understanding are a yud and hay. But when the wisdom is drawing from Keter, which is expressed by the fact of the turban, that makes a purified wisdom and understanding in a remarkable way. Ki hametz nefes u'masha ha'keser nimshach b'moichen, and the turban represents that which the crown flows into the mind.
What's the chesvav base? What's the Russian table?
Chochma u'bina, wisdom and understanding. There are enormous numbers of abbreviations in these discourses, which is one of the paradoxes, that here is the Chabad movement trying to make the mystical dimension accessible, and it does. There's only one problem. It uses so many abbreviations, which no one ever uses. once one of my children, like 14 years old, so he was sitting in a Beit Medrash of a very, very learned Jew in Stamford Hill. In fact, he's a Hasidic Rebbe. So this Hasidic Rebbe was trying to learn something, and he came to an abbreviation he didn't know. So he knew my son learning in a Chabad yeshiva will know, you know. So he comes over to him and says, "What does this mean?" Which is a very beautiful expression of his own self-effacement, mm-hmm. that this revered Rebbe person mm-hmm. is able to ask a little boy, basically. And my son told him what it was. But it's interesting that there are so many...
Do you remember which one it was?
No. It was Zalmi, so if you meet him, you could ask. Right, so now we come from the turban to the belt. Now then we come to the belt. That's on the next page. This is in order to atone for the thoughts of transgression in the heart, which is actually what it says in the Talmud. The Talmud says, now it's interesting, the belt is not worn by the high priest around his hips like we normally wear a belt. It's worn much higher up. So it's worn higher up near the heart. Mm. And that is where this belt is worn according to what it says there in the Talmud. The inyono lakasha,
also tantric and chakra awakening points in the shiatsu meridians.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I think that's important.
Right, fair enough.
Because there's lots of connections, as you
said. Absolutely. Listen, it's...
Who influenced who?
Well, God started it all up. So, and what does the belt do? The inyonoi lakasha hamakifim imapnimim. Now that's a very interesting thing. A belt holds the garments close to the body. So the garments in themselves, like a cloak, can be billowing out. And a belt holds the cloak close in. So this is what the belt is doing. It is taking something surrounding and bonding it with that which is inward. And the belts would take the garments and make them join with the body. So the body is inside, and the clothes are some kind of surrounding radiance, and the body is an inner dimension. And the idea is that the surrounding radiance should somehow be close to the body. Mm-hmm. Now, a surrounding radiance, in Kabbalistic terms, is very interesting, because the surrounding radiance has great energy, but is also dangerous, because there can be a leakage of energy. And so therefore, by making sure that it's somehow close in, is a way in which there is a certain kind of protective quality. The inyan hamshocha samakifim bepnimim, and the idea of drawing the surrounding energy into the inward dimension, shal yedeya avnet, through the belt, humasha bina liba, is the fact that understanding relates to the heart. You see, there's a section of the Zohar, or the Tikkuni Zohar, that is said every Friday afternoon before Shabbat. And so there's a sense in which from Bina, from understanding, it reaches down to the heart, like the idea of an understanding heart. So that is this.
Do you know that in modern neuroscience they've just discovered that there are great numbers of both hormones, neurotransmitters, and also cells that are very similar in the heart and in the brain?
And they'll come back eventually to the idea that the heart feels.
That's now being looked at.
Right, very interesting.
Yep.
Because, of course, in these Hasidic texts, it talks about the heart feeling, the affective aspect of the heart. And then people say, no, it's not really the heart, it's the brain, and you only think it's the heart.
No, but we're coming back, right? Actually, very linked in this new research.
Okay.
Kidneys will be next.
That's right. Yeah. The kidneys will be next. Yeah, the kidneys is a source of planning. source of, well, we'll see, we'll see.
That pressure gets up, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
So we have the understanding flowing down into the heart. And from the heart, it flows from the heart throughout the body. It flows into everything. Now, you should know a very interesting part of Jewish anatomy, as it were, and Jewish description of the physical body, going back to the Zohar, is the idea of basically the circulation of the blood. The idea that the heart is pumping through the whole body, and that there is a flow from the heart to everywhere else in the body. And so this concept is that you have the understanding coming down to the heart. So look, there's a flow from Keter, the crown, to wisdom, to understanding, to the heart. And then from the heart, it's going to go all round. It's going to go all round the body. Sorry?
No.
Yeah. 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 So it's coming through, and that's part of the visualization, is the way in which we're connecting with something very spiritual beyond, and how that is then flowing into us, into the heart, and from the heart it is going through the whole person. And in prayer, Kol atzmoy saitomano Hashem yikamoicho, all my bones will say God, who is like, you know, to be able to pray to God with one's whole being, and being in a state of ecstasy, which might lead to doing somersaults in shul. So you have to pick your shul very carefully, especially in the women's section. So there is this flow coming from the heart. The Hari Alev Hume Atlot Shlitin, because the heart is one of the three governors of the body: Melech, the king; Moicha, Liba, Kivda. The heart, the brain, the heart, and the liver. And so there you have the brain, the heart, and the liver, which have this powerful quality, quite apart with what they do anatomically, also what they do spiritually and psychologically, perhaps. So the lechein liver podig lechol shaitin, and because the heart has this ruling quality, it flows, it distributes. You see, these words are from the Zohar.
If you break down liver, it's bad.
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 Oh, how interesting.
Like bad.
You see what Judith has done? Bad is linen.
Yeah.
Keved is liver. And so kvad, like the linen. So,
yeah, and also heaviness.
Okay, all right.
It's very interesting.
All right. So there you have the heart, at the moment focusing on the heart, that the heart pours energy and life force to all limbs. Shemahalev nimshech b'shaya varim, from the heart it flows into the other limbs. V'haynu she'inyin ha'avne. What is the belt? Lahamshich ha'moichin b'midas. To draw from the mind into the emotions. Now that's a very, very interesting process. You see, because we have the emotions, which are kindness and severity, love and mercy, and so on. And do these emotions function by themselves, or do they have the backing of the mind? Now the truth is, the emotions can be there by themselves, but as such they're very unstable. And they can blossom and then go out like a flare. You light a piece of newspaper and it burns up with a nice bright flame, and then a few moments later it's gone and there's nothing. So there can be this gush of love and it's got nothing behind it and just disappears, and so you can't rely on it. Whereas if there is a cerebral dimension as well, which is flowing down into the heart, then the emotions of the heart have a stability and have a power and have a permanence that you can rely on them, you can live according to them and live with them, and they will help. And that's why the belt was 32 cubits long. Now 32 is both the number, it's a number which makes the word heart, and also it is the 32 paths of wisdom. So it's the idea of the wisdom flowing into the heart. And all this is being achieved by the belt, because the belt is holding things together around the heart, so that the heart's able to have its effect in the best way. Because what the belt is doing, the 32 cubit long belt wound round and round the person, is to draw down the surrounding radiances and forces into the heart. And this flows through the belt. It's not like the flow of the crown into wisdom, which Shubha Mitznefes, with the turban. Shubha Mitznefes, because with the turban, what is drawn into wisdom is something concealed. And mitznefes, the word turban, relates to the word sofnas, which like sofun, something hidden. The afikoman at the Seder is often called sofun, something hidden. Sofnas paneach, revealing the hidden. That was the name that Joseph had in Egypt. So there is a this flow from keter into wisdom, which is so special and brings out this abnegation quality, this self-effacing quality of wisdom. It's not something revealed outwardly. It's something internal. It's something very deep within. Whereas the fact that the heart is enthusiastic and is spreading its enthusiasm and excitement through the whole body, that is something which is a visible thing. Unless in some way you have to conceal your excitement, which might be part of... As it was said, there's a letter from a chassid. He was a chassid in the time of the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, and there was some point of mystical thought that was like on his mind, and for years he was thinking about it. And one day he went in to see Rabbi Dovber, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, in private audience, and they spoke about this particular thing that for years he'd been thinking about it. And the Rebbe gave him a way of understanding it that he was so excited that he wanted to run and sing and dance. And he writes in his letter, "But I decided it was better not to do that." It might be misinterpreted. So sometimes you have to rein it in. It's, even though you have this tremendous chayus, so that's the thing about the belt. The belt, which is drawing things together to the heart, and also represents the heart spreading this energy everywhere else through the person, is something usually open. Now we come to the robe, to the outer robe, the ksoines, the inyan hakaso, a kind of shirt. The inyan hakasoines, now the robe or shirt, hu lechapel oven shvichas domin, is to atone for the sin of shedding of blood. God forbid. Now, it's not going to mean literal shedding of blood. The kasoines, because this shirt, this cloak, shayich lakasoines pasim shetavru b'da, it relates to the many colored cloak of Joseph that was dipped in blood. And so that all relates to violence and blood and something negative, right? So the word, this cloak, the kosoinus, relates to something violent and negative. The inyan ashvichus domim, and what is meant by this pouring of blood, this shedding of blood, what he's going to say, it's in a rather involved way within the various verses from the Torah. He doesn't mean pouring of blood like harming another person. He means the energy within the whole divine structure of the Sphira, which is like a kind of a spiritual anthropomorphic form. And if we do something wrong, we are causing a leakage of energy. So any wrong action, in a sense, is a shedding of blood. It's a very subtle way of looking at it.
Spiritual anthropomorphism.
Well, the Sfirot are spiritual.
Mm.
Right? So they are manifestation of the divine. And so, but they have a certain image, like a anthropomorphic image. So by shedding blood, we are, by doing something wrong in some way, we are, as it were, enabling a leakage to take place. And so therefore this shedding of blood is somehow or other breaking a pathway within the Sfirot and bringing about a leakage of spiritual energy in the wrong way, which can have a very bad effect in the world. Because
uncontrolled
energy, like fire. Yes, God forbid, a fire is started because fire, which is useful, is allowed to become uncontrolled and causes damage and then spread. So within the spiritual sphere, there is a energy which we are somehow in touch with. And by the fact of us acting in the wrong way, we are causing a leakage which can have a very damaging effect. It's, now, so you see, this is another way of expressing the subtlety of shedding blood. There's another subtle way, which it doesn't mention here, of explaining what is meant by shedding blood within a person, putting a person to shame. If you say something to a person which embarrasses them, their face goes white, that's another...
Or red.
That's another subtle way of shedding blood within the person, of shedding another person's blood. God forbid, there's literal shedding blood, and then there's more subtle varieties of shedding blood. So here it is one which could be any negative action.
The national icon in this country
is, go on,
is doing just that. They have primetime television, You Are the Weakest Thing, with the biggest jibes that can possibly be given all the time as the model. Name, shame and blame is government policy.
Oh really?
Yes, for education, for schools, for anybody who doesn't perform well enough. It's the culture at present here.
Not just here. It's interesting.
It's very sad.
Yeah, instead of building people up, instead of helping. It's interesting. You see, in Jewish thought, to put someone to shame is considered like killing them. So it says that if you have to, you have to correct a person. So first of all, try and do so in a private way. And the problem is, what happens when it goes over the edge of human behavior? Yes, let's say a man has left his wife and is refusing to give her a divorce, which is wrecking her life. So in fact, in the Orthodox newspapers, particularly those published in America, they have a thing where they say, you know, so and so, Mr. so and so, you know, has left his wife 4 years ago and is refusing to give her a divorce, you know. So they are trying to shame him in order to persuade him to do this. So when one is dealing with, you know, the tragic elements and dimensions of life, then comes the question of how exactly to deal with it. And but in terms of, let's say, wholesome, the normal wholesome realm of, or ideally wholesome realm of human relationship, if one can avoid putting anyone to shame, then you're winning. So there is this idea of shedding of blood, and it's the cloak which relates to this. Umadaik Bekisra Rizal, and in the Lurianic writings it explains the Odom Asheni, you see, it says Shoifech Dama Odom Ba Odom, he spills the blood of man in a man. What does it mean, the second man? He spills the blood of man in a man, whom a yuta. The second word man is extra. It should have just said he sheds the blood of a man. Or mavaya, instead of shofech dama odom ba'odom, which it says in the Torah in Parshas Noach, where it's really giving the seven Noachide laws, or part of them, not to spill blood. So umavayin it explains she kavonas hakosuf hi alinin the shofech dama odom de kedusha ba'odom belial. It's shedding the blood of the man of holiness, which means the spheres, into the negative shadow of that, the odom de la'umase, the man of the klipot, the man of the concealment of the shells, the hidingness of godliness. So it's not only a matter of atoning. You have to somehow put right. Something has been spilt, and you have to put it right. And that's what it speaks about this concept about the cloak. And he says that the cloak covered the whole body down to the feet. And that relates to all the different emotions, kindness, severity, mercy, victory, submission, dedication, all the way down, that is what the cloak is trying to put right, and that anything which has been spilt from those emotional attributes in the wrong way should be somehow recouped. It's as if the flow of blood that is poured in the wrong way can somehow be got back, and so something where one has spilt spiritual energy can be retrieved. And finally, we come the inyan amichnasayim and the trousers. Hu kamoshe kosuv lechasos psa'i ever. This is to cover nakedness. The inyan shabon lechapel avon giluy arayis, and it comes to atone for the transgression of sexual sins. Haksuvim la'achazeh v'pashazu, which are written in this sedra. Further on in the sedra, it talks about incest, adultery, and so on. Ubesviris hu besviris hamalchus, and in the sviris, that is the attribute of kingship. So we have the different emotions coming down, that's being atoned for by the cloak, and then we have the attribute of kingship here at the bottom, which represents the feminine divine quality. And when one is speaking about the transgression of something where there is the wrong kind of flow which is taking place on the most intimate level as a human being, that is and that is causing a negative kind of flow, and so therefore this aspect of the clothes of the priest are in order to atone for that and achieve purity in that level. And Bechinas Nukva, the feminine, which is also Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people represent that feminine. You see, the same way that in life there is a frailty about the feminine is in a sense at risk, the woman has to be more careful, the Jewish people have this frailty and are at risk and have to be careful, and there is danger. And so that danger is because this is the point of Malchus. Now, about Malchus, it says, Knesset Yisrael sheshom noigeya sheyeh kedusha v'tara. For the Jewish people, it's very significant that there should be holiness and purity. If there isn't holiness and purity, it's very damaging. You could imagine another person, so he's a good person. Not holy, not pure necessarily, but he's a good person, he doesn't do anything bad, doesn't steal, doesn't kill, that's fine. Whereas the Jew has to have this extra level somehow. It's it's like young girls, 14-year-old girls say, why can't I go around casually dressed the same way my brother does? He goes around and he's he's not wearing this and not wearing, no one complains, and if I don't wear those things, everyone makes a fuss. Yes, within the Orthodox structure. So it matters. And so there is this quality, because with Malchus, there has to be, with kingship, there has to be an extra level of guarding. There is, with this feminine dimension of kingship, there is an extra dimension. Adar Yerachayim, and that is why the cloak is over the body down to the thighs, Mishum Shei Keneged Amidus, because the cloak corresponds to emotions, whereas the trousers, Heim Mimosnaim Ad Yerachayim, they're from the hips down to the thighs. Levad migufa, levad migufa, beyond the body, and that is the quality of kingship, and that is also what it means. And that is also what it means, that the trousers, they come from a word michnasayim, something koines, something gathering in. So huzel in yinsiras hamalchus, like the attribute of malchus, of the feminine, which gathers in. Knesset Yisrael, which also is a gathering, the gathering of the Jewish people, shekoneses v'esefes hagiluim shalamayla, because it gathers in the revelations from above. And these garments, to cut it short, are very sacred, and they are drawing this sanctity down into the person, and so therefore... And then we come to the idea of why does it repeat the word linen, the word bad, all the time. Now the point is that bad grows from flax. The linen is flax. And apparently flax grows in a very singular way, unlike wheat, for example, where from one corner of wheat, one grain of wheat, lots of different shoots come up. Flax grows in a much more singular way. There's something about flax. I wanted to try and actually look this up to find out more about the way that flax grows. But according to this traditional teaching, the flax is something very singular. And what is that singularity? It's what's called emunah, faith. And that is what it describes in the Talmud. The Talmud begins discussing what are the basic laws of Judaism. And it says, Bach Habakkuk vehemidim al achas. The prophet Habakkuk came and he said, you know what? There's one basic thing in Judaism. Tzadik ve'emunoso yichyeh. The righteous lives by his faith. Now that quality of faith, that's really something which goes absolutely beyond. And it's that ability to have that single-mindedness of faith. That's what the bav, that's what the linen, the stalk of flax represents. And that's what we're trying to bring into every one of these different dimensions. Whether it's the turban, or whether it's the belt, or whether it's the cloak, or whether it's the trousers. To have within it this quality of faith, because that is the real bonding quality which bonds us to the infinite. So a person can enjoy a sense of the spiritual and a sense of guarding themselves, but higher than that is actually the bonding of faith which goes beyond to the infinite. And it's drawing that quality of emunah, of faith, through the entire system. That makes the picture of each one of us as the high priest entering our own Holy of Holies, coming close to God. And so what we really have here is a kind of a visualization that a person can think through about the inner or surrounding, like aura, as it were, around the person. What is the real spiritual structure of the person? And this would be a way of preparing for prayer or for a day or for life, and that is this little teaching from 30 years ago. Thank you. This was the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Schneur.
Very interesting.
Of course, the word bad for bad, it means alone. Labad.
Oh, that's interesting. Bad means alone, yes.
Yeah. And bodod.
Yes, bodod, yes, 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 to be alone.
Means alone.
Insulated.
Yeah.
Four times.
Yes. Yeah.
And words it says is bad for bad.